We hear a lot of perspectives on the Mankind podcast. Inclusion of a guest is not an endorsement of their views, and the opinions expressed here do not always represent the mission or values of the Mankind Project USA.
I think that a lot of times people are waiting to feel comfortable, you know, to do something that feels challenging, and the irony is that it's not going to feel comfortable. When I hear people say all the time, like, are you comfortable doing this? And I always think, what a terrible question that is. For me, it's much more, are you willing to do it despite the discomfort? The courage piece is that you just don't know. You know, that's what makes it courageous, is that There's a risk involved. I mean, personally, for me to express my innermost feelings and feel no risk, that's better. So I'm not an advocate of going like, oh, we should always have courageous conversations. We should always be on our edge. At the same time, I don't think there's real growth unless we are on our edge. And so that's the paradox there. How can you be as comfortable and equanimous as possible while continuing to live into your own sense of mission?
G'day and welcome to another episode of the Mankind Podcast, the show where we break the molds of modern manhood to prove that there is more than just one way to be a man. Now, in order to enact this mission of ours, we understand that as me, the host, and our guests, we have to engage in courageous conversations, which means speaking to the topics that a lot of us don't want to, are afraid to, just want to avoid in general. Now, the reason why we believe this is important is so that we can get to the core of issues, so that we can speak directly to what is going on in our world, in our relationships, for our boys, for our men, for the women in our lives. Let's get to it. Let's quit fighting and trying to debate on a surface level the symptoms of what's going on. No, let's be bold enough. Let's be courageous enough to speak to the hard-hitting, difficult, messy, disgusting, gross issues that are impacting the world right now. Now, I said that with a lot of confidence, but the fact of the matter is, courageous conversations are easier said than done. Enter Daniel Ellenberg. Now, Daniel Ellenberg is the president of the Society for the Psychological Study of Men and Masculinities. Gosh, say that five times. He's also a PhD, co-founder of Relationships That Work. He is an author at the Good Men Project, leadership coach, psychotherapist, seminar leader. I'm going to stop it there because this dude has more letters and more experience than I can properly illustrate for you. And Daniel comes on to share with us in this episode the importance of having courageous conversations. But more importantly, and you're going to be excited as the listener, he gives us tangible steps. In fact, three keys that allow any of us, regardless of the situation, regardless of where the conflict or the desire or the connection is, three keys that we can implement to work that muscle, to become better at having these difficult conversations. And I tell you what, out of the almost 100 interviews I have done since becoming a member of the Mankind Project and doing interviews like this, this possibly has been one of the most powerful seeds that has been planted in my mind to help me understand the actual playing field that's going on when I am judging another person that's different from me, when I'm in conflict with someone who I disagree with. I tell you what I believe you're going to learn from this episode could potentially inform all of your thoughts going forward when it comes to confronting, working with, discussing difficult issues with the people closest to you and the people on the other side of the aisle that you disagree with. Enjoy. So, Daniel, welcome to the show, mate. Take a moment to introduce yourself and what you're all about, and we'll get underway.
Thank you, Brandon. I appreciate that. And I was telling you, as a young man of 28 years old, I started really my men's work stuff when I was 27, and I'm 67 now. So I've been in the, I don't know, not exactly trenches, because it's not war, for a long time. I've been leading weekly men's groups now. March 14th will be 37 years. And that first group is still going. And I have another group that's 34 years. And, you know, I met Bill many, many years ago. I did the Mankind Project. I've done a lot of different things as a participant. So I feel like I've been a kind of a student leader for a lot of years, both leading the charge and also, you know, following from behind and being part of, you know, a burgeoning movement of conscious guys. And gosh darn, we need more consciousness in our male population, probably female as well, but talking about boys and men today, we need more consciousness because our planet needs us to be more conscious.
Let's get stuck into courageous conversations, because when I hear courageous conversations, instantly I associate that with addressing conflict. Like, for me to have courage to have a conversation, it's got to be conflict that we're addressing here. But before we went live, you gave an interesting distinction that there are many different ways that we can have courageous conversations. So, mate, kind of paint a picture or a bird's eye view of this for us.
Well, I think we can start off with the word itself. Courage, which comes from the French, which I always mispronounce, coeur, which means heart or innermost feelings. And so when we're talking about courage, we're really speaking about expressing our innermost feelings. Interestingly enough, I years ago was introduced to a professor from Clemson University who was a known courage researcher. And she and I had a Skype call. It was before even Zoom was happening years ago. And I remember asking her this question, which had been on my mind for many years, which had to do with how has interpersonal courage been studied? And she looked like something hit her between the eyes. Now, here is a world-renowned courage researcher. And she said, it's never been studied. She never even thought about it. And I was like, I looked at her relieved. Like, you know, it seemed to me that would be something that would be core, you know, to who we are as beings, in that every day, each of us have many opportunities to express our innermost feelings to someone who may not be completely open to those. And so in order to express those feelings, you need to have a certain muscle behind it, which means you have to practice that. And to me, unless you really are able to be on a level with someone where you can express who you really are, or at least who you believe you are, because sometimes we're not actually aware of all the different aspects of ourselves. Unless there's more transparency, there's not deep, real relationship. And so I think about it in terms of the word intimacy, which I know a lot of times people conflate with sex or sexuality. I don't. I think you can have sexuality without intimacy. You can have intimacy without sexuality. Best when you have both. But in terms of, you know, general intimacy, thinking about the phonetic as into me see. And so you're allowing the other, if it's only one person or a group, to see into you, to reveal what is deepest and most vulnerable within you, which obviously takes a huge amount of inner trust. And certainly to some degree, it takes trust in the other. Because if I'm going to lay down my guard, you know, in your presence, I either need to believe that no matter how you respond to me, I'm going to be able to metabolize that. You know, I'm going to be able to cope with it no matter what. And or that I trust you, that if I show you what is most vulnerable in me, that you will be at a minimum respectful of that. And you will not attack from that place. The courage piece is that you just don't know. You know, that's what makes it courageous, is that there's a risk involved. I mean, personally, for me to express my innermost feelings and feel no risk, that's better. So I'm not an advocate of going like, oh, we should always have courageous conversation. We should always be on our edge. At the same time, I don't think there's real growth unless we are on our edge. And so that's the paradox there. How can you be as comfortable and equanimous as possible while continuing to live into your own sense of mission? And I just to say one last thing. I know you're about to ask a question, which really has to do with why would we be having a courageous conversation in the first place? Mm-hmm. And I think that generally speaking, people don't consider that. Like, what is the end in mind? Mm-hmm. Like, what's your purpose mm-hmm. in raising something in the first place?
Yeah.
Do you want to hurt the other person? I know earlier in my life, I was courageous because I was way more out there mm-hmm. than most people. I would challenge. I was, you know, willing to deal with conflict in a way that most people were not willing to do. At the same time, I've come to see how ignorant just unconscious I was in terms of why was I doing that? Because sometimes, you know, a lot of times really I felt hurt by something and I wanted to inflict some revenge on them. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Sure. There's a lot there. And so the thread that I want to pull and look at is the distinction between adopting this idea of courage in the moment and how to hit that sweet spot with it, because I've experienced it myself. I've seen it in other men that have joined the Mankind Project. It's these men that finally feel like they have a voice. They've found their voice. They feel like they're able to courageously speak their truth. And then they just become just savages with it. Like right. They're looking for fights left and right because they've had all these years of not speaking up or right. speaking their truth. Right. And they go, well, I'm courageous now. I'm going to start calling stuff out when I see it. And kudos to the person that can find some growth in that. But also at the same time, it can be quite damaging to swing to the other side yeah. of the spectrum yeah. there. And so where are the first steps that we can take, us the listeners? Where can we begin to start having some courage in conversations that we have with others?
Great question. Well, before I respond to that question, I want to say something about the buildup to what you're sharing, mm-hmm. Brandon, which is that we're going to make mistakes. You know, yeah. So people, you know, starting off on their path of being more courageous, you're going to blow it. You're going to make mistakes. And I think that we have to remove mm-hmm. this sense of perfection. You're going to get to this mm-hmm. point. I'm going to raise whatever is important to me in the most perfect manner. We're always going to have a great conversation and it's going to get through and it's all going to work out so perfectly. No.
Yeah. So maybe in the mirror.
Yeah, probably not even there.
Yeah.
Who is that guy looking at me? Why are you looking at me like that anyway? Oh, that's right. That was me.
Yeah, you're talking to me.
Yeah, so I think that if you start off with a place of compassion, that is a better place to begin. Now, when you think about the guys you're talking about, and believe me, I was one of them, that have stuffed it. You know, since boyhood, adolescence, you know, learn to be either a good boy or just not wanting to get in trouble in some way, you know, or aware of some rage that their rage could tear up people around them, and then get license finally to express that. And then it comes out willy-nilly because they actually are trying to get some type of revenge. You have stuffed me down. I've been pushed into a hole. I'm going to get out of the hole. I'm going to show how strong I am. And no one's going to give me shit anymore, period. I'm not going to take it anymore. Well, you know, that is a particular evolutionary stage. And I'm really not here to disparage it. I think that, you know, sometimes you might need to go through that.
Yeah.
You know, to be aware at least about what's your end game in that. For me personally, I say less now than I have in decades. Mm. I'm constantly practicing an acronym that I heard from a good friend, colleague of mine, and the acronym is WAIT, which stands for Why Am I Talking?
That's a good one.
I think that when you step back and you notice an irritant, something comes up in you, some trigger comes up. I used to be hair trigger, like immediately saying something. I very rarely do that anymore because I find that first thought is not always the most intelligent thought. You know, sometimes people say, like, follow, you know, trust your instincts. I'm here to say, maybe not so much again, because sometimes instincts are just defensive. You know, you're just trying to protect something, and that's not going to create intimacy.
Okay. Well, and so where can we define a path now for me and those listening? Because you said a second ago that it's messy. There's going to be slip-ups and mistakes. And then you mentioned, why am I talking? Now, I would judge that to be at the stage of development and growth that you're at to implement less is more, my words, creating connection and having courageous conversations through speaking less. But for that person who's trying to work that muscle, as you say, build that muscle, that courage muscle, and you say mistakes, like, it's going to be messy, you're going to make mistakes. What do you want to say to that person as they're about to speak to their wife or speak to their boss or speak to their colleague that they might be in disagreement with?
Clarity of intent. Why are you raising it in the first place? What do you want? What is your purpose for bringing something up? What do you, and so I find most people either say mum or are blurters. I'm personally someone who's overcoming the blur syndrome. But to actually step back and really spend time going, what do I really want? Like, if you and I had some issue, or I had some issue with you, Brandon, and I found, like, if we worked together, you walked past me in the hall and you didn't acknowledge my presence. And that triggers something because we knew each other and you used to be friendlier and now you're not friendly anymore. And I go, what happened? And I'm in this story about
spiral.
And it's either I did something wrong, I'm a bad person, or you're a jerk and I'm projecting onto you. People tend to be either self-referential or blaming the other. And so I might be in what I call my assumption warehouse. Like, I'm telling myself stories about the meaning of your behavior. I may often be wrong, but I don't tend to be in doubt about that. And so I think one of the first steps is, like, what do I want? Like, what would be my purpose in raising something to Brandon? And the first step is looking at my own self-concept. Okay, so he is now what I perceive to be ignoring me, and that is triggering something in my self-concept, which has to do with my sense of self-importance or self-significance. And indeed, I have a wound. You know, let's just say that when I called out to my mother, she didn't respond. That wasn't true, but if I called out, she didn't respond. And so I internalized the message that I don't really matter. So it doesn't really matter what I think, what I feel. And so that is a belief I have, and it becomes an invisible lens through which I see the world and I perceive the world. And I don't realize that you're not doing that to me. That actually all of this game, so to speak, is within me, and you've done things, you've created conditions in which that which is within me gets triggered. And so I have an opportunity, if I'm on a path of consciousness, to go, what on earth is happening in me that I'm so activated by someone not looking at me, you know, walking down the hall? And so they say, okay. So really, one of the first steps is, like, is this a self issue that is really important for me to deal with, and maybe not so important to deal with interpersonally? And because there's a way that it's very easy to interpersonalize, I know that's not quite a word, you know, one's own personal dynamics. And so, okay, so maybe I won't say something because I'm going to work on this in myself. How can I feel more important so that I'm not so triggered by someone, in this case, you?
Or if you can't avoid the conversation with them, you can't, like, you, they walk past you in the hallway, they didn't acknowledge you, it triggered this story and these feelings inside of you, you may have a meeting with that person immediately after that. And so first thing you could do, just riffing here, is just call out and own the story of, like, hey, the story I'm telling myself is this, because what I judged was you not acknowledging me in the hallway. This is my story, my stuff, not yours. I'm just calling it out.
You know, and I think that's a great thing. And then, you know, one of the big issues is what kind of culture, you know, are you living in? Are you working in? Because to do something like that in some cultures would be so far, you know, off the grid.
Out of scope.
But I think that takes courage, really. And I think each of us has a responsibility to up our courage level, because really upping our courage level is upping our capacity to connect and to create true community there. Without those types of conversations, it's difficult to really get through. And but what I liked about what you did, Brandon, was that you took responsibility for it. Hey, I'm telling myself a story that I'm not saying you don't like me.
Yeah.
You know, you don't respect me. I can tell you don't respect me.
Yeah.
And immediately the other person's on their back heels and they're going like, wow, you're so privy to my self-understanding about what my motivations, and you give me no room to actually have my own experience.
Bingo.
And so what you did was you begin to open the possibility of having a curious conversation.
A curious conversation.
I actually just thought of that for the first time. But curiosity is a major part of connection. Like, to get over the experience that you know exactly why someone did what they did, and even to get over the some sense that you know why you did what you did.
Mm.
Because as one neuroscientist said, unfortunately, Mother Nature has not seen fit to invest much neural architecture and self-awareness, you know. And so we get to know ourselves better through connections with others. I can say for me, in terms of how I was really trying to exact a pound of flesh, and I didn't know that when I was younger, but I kept getting feedback from people that they didn't like it when I was hostile. I couldn't understand why didn't they appreciate my hostility? Now, obviously, we need to live here.
Well, if we're talking, I don't know, for those that know of the Enneagram or may not be aware of the Enneagram, basically it's a personality spectrum, you know, test. There's 9 numbers and you generally are more of one than others. And the 8 in the Enneagram is the challenger. And a very little portion of the population are an 8. And they're those that challenge and conflict to them isn't about winning or power or dominance. It's a means to connection. And a lot of people that have that challenger mindset that are good at standing in the fire and in the ring with conflict, they're not in it to beat you. They're in it because they want you to go toe to toe with them. They don't see the emotional impact as much. They don't see it as a hurtful thing. They're like, no, stand in the fire with me. Let's figure this out. And a personality like mine, I score very low in the challenger. I see that and I instantly feel the heart rate start to go up, you know, my pulse start to race and starting to feel that fight, flight, or freeze reaction in my body. So if we can establish in our organization, in our company, in our nonprofit, in our family, that really feedback is both a gift to receive and give, and that crucial conversations, these courageous conversations, are an opportunity to connect, an opportunity to grow. Am I getting this correctly?
Absolutely.
Okay, absolutely. Cool.
Yeah, and when you were just speaking before, Brandon, about going into a more threat-based reaction, fight, flight, freeze, I think a lot of times people use those physiological or psychophysiological reactions as a cause célèbre to shut up. You know, like that becomes the signal. Oh, don't go in here. Danger, danger. And for those of us who remember Lost in Space, danger, Will Robinson, danger. You know, and so that becomes the motivation to stay silent. And I would say that no, not really. I think that a lot of times people are waiting to feel comfortable, you know, to do something that feels challenging. And the irony is that it's not going to feel comfortable. When I hear people say all the time, like, are you comfortable doing this? And I always think, what a terrible question that is. For me, it's much more, are you willing to do it despite the discomfort?
Thank you. It's that difference between willingness and wantingness. For example, I want to be seen as a man that has no biases or, you know, inherited prejudices around race. I want to be seen as that. But am I willing to do the cultural work? Am I willing to leave my neighborhood and go into someone else's neighborhood to see how they live, to try my best to understand and have a conversation around it? I want to be seen as someone who's great in relationship and that holds these, has all these models and tools to connect and approach conflict. But in my relationship, am I actually willing to admit when I'm wrong? Or am I willing to investigate that inside?
Right.
I love that you distinguish that, because comfort seems to be this thing that we as human beings are constantly racing towards. Express everything. You order it now and it's there in the afternoon. But really, where is the growth if we're trying to find comfort? Like, people are, when they come to men's group, they're like, I'm looking to be comfortable enough to be vulnerable. That is an oxymoron. Because to be vulnerable, comfort doesn't have anything to do with vulnerability. It's emotional risk. It takes courage to be vulnerable.
Exactly. And you have to know why you're doing it. You don't have to, but it's a good thing to know that there's a purpose behind it.
The clarity of intent that you mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, you were sharing, I think, in a way that most people would resonate with, that when they think about even the territory of courageous conversations, they immediately assume conflict, you know, that there's some issue.
Yeah.
At least I, as the experiencer, are feeling, and I need to get it off my chest and get it out there. And I don't see it like that. I think that that's true, you know, certainly for some. But I also think that a lot of times people actually want closer connection, and yes, there's something that feels like it's in the way through that. And they want to say that, you know, as I was telling you earlier, Brandon, like, hey, you know, like the little boy in me, like, I like you, Brandon. Do you like me? Do you like, it's just, it's so innocent.
Yeah.
You know, and that need for connection is so great. I'm thinking about, you had Niobe Wey on your podcast recently, which I saw. And in her work, she saw that there was a certain dividing point when boys start turning into adolescents, where they are basically shamed eventually into giving up their vulnerability with other boys.
Yeah.
And the vulnerability is actually the portal into connection.
Yes.
And once you give that up, that somehow you're different, I'm not going to share this with you because you're going to betray me. Once that happens, then there's complete isolation. And when there's isolation and loneliness, it opens up that back closet into all these horrible things that happens in male psychology. You know, and to me, that's super painful. I can feel, you know, some level of tears, you know, that just starting to come out, because in some ways, that's at the core of my work with men. You know, it's like, you can reclaim that. It's just, it saddens me that so many men are deeply beautiful, wonderful beings who've learned to hide through shame and fear and threat. And I think it's messed up that we have a world like that. You know, that somehow we start conflating, you know, openness with femininity. You know, like this message that guys need to get in touch with their feminine sides. I think it's one of the worst branding messages ever, because I'm as a very emotional man, and I've cried a lot in my life, and I really can feel deeply. I never ever think like, oh, I am getting in touch with my feminine side right now. It's just a part of being human. And one of the big problems is that we learn that there are certain things that are feminine, and certain that are masked, and even sexual inventories, like health is designated, you know, in terms of your identification, what's considered to be the masculine role and the feminine role, it turns out, yeah, is much more about relatedness and compassion and care and nurturing. Like, mm-hmm, why is that not in the domain of being male?
Because when we're boys, we're trained out of those sensitivities. We're trained out of those caring, kind of nurturing, because we've put an association and an expectation on gender to behave a certain way. Men are the hunter-gatherers, so innately they're the doers. Women are the ones in the tribe who, you know, nurture the children and nurture the and foster that growth. And so they are the feelers. And so if I'm a man growing up, well, my self-worth is associated with doing. And as a woman, exactly, theirs is with feeling and keeping a clean household. Like, these are the associations that we're not far removed from. 50 years ago is not a long time. A long time ago in the grand scheme of things. You know, Daniel, as we have this conversation, you know, I feel very grateful and fortunate to be living in the South. It's natural, I think, that people who haven't spent a lot of time in the South, they have this association, whether it's through Beverly Hillbillies or, like, you know, they assume that the South is a certain way, just like they assume the North is a certain way in California. You know, our minds like to create these judgments so that we can close a loop and put a full stop on how certain people are. And I love the hotbed of conversation that's happening here. And although I would judge many of it to be different from perhaps some of my leanings or some of my beliefs, I love that I get to meet men who, although we voted differently in the previous election, they're willing to have a conversation about it. Not to be right, but to understand.
Beautiful.
And I love that because, and this is a conversation I've been having with a lot of people. You know, we're hearing a lot about cancel culture these days, about someone makes a mistake in their past or present, and it's found out through a yearbook or something like that. And then all of a sudden, there is no redemption for that person. So we're not inviting them to look at it. We're indicting them with some cancel label, right? And what if we could have this conversation instead? What if we could have this rather than just throwing more fuel on the fire to division, more fuel on the fire for anger, and not just anger, I'm talking toxic anger, rage. When a father is willing to forgive the drunk driver that killed their child, how are we not willing to forgive someone that voted differently than us in the last election? Or why aren't we willing to open a dialogue, not from a place of a pedestal, like a moral hierarchical pedestal, but to go, hey, in this conversation, am I willing to look at the holes in my beliefs or the holes in my argument?
Really beautifully put, Brandon. Really touching. I think about Winston Churchill, who said, it takes courage to stand up and speak. It also takes courage to sit down and listen. Mm. You know, and the willingness to listen, to understand, not to agree, but the willingness to go, like, what is it actually like to be this person who has had these particular influences, these particular experiences in life that have led them to create a worldview,
yeah,
that leads them to, for example, you know, support Donald Trump. Now, since we're wading into the political waters, I'm undeterred in there, and I would say I'm not a fan, to put it mildly, because I think he is the absolute representation of some of the worst aspects of masculinity. But at the same time, it is actually a trigger point for a lot of people, and that is a view of, you know, being a real man, a strong man. Yeah. And I would say, in terms of my own work, which I mentioned to you, I call strength with heart.
Yeah.
I would call that strength with no heart. You know, there, that there's no empathy. There's just a lack of feeling, really, for others. But, you know, people who were raised with more authoritarianism are more prone to that. And we know that there are differences and divides in the political spectrum, which is not to say everyone who is Republican is this way, everyone who's Democrat. Yes. That's not the case. And the problem is when you start talking about tendencies, people are always looking for exceptions, which is fair enough. But at the same time, in some ways, eliminates the importance of the conversation. And you know, the problem to me is dogmatism, be it on the right or left. And I'm not saying there's a moral equivalence to, you know, white supremacists, you know, on the right and cancel culture people on the left. You know, so I'm not saying that. And the difficulty these days,
there's no quantitative measurement.
No, I mean, and there may indeed be, but the problem is that we don't have a culture where we can actually talk about our criticisms of even people on the right and left. Like if you're on the left, to criticize on the left, it is a little dangerous. Like I find that as president of my, it's an APA, American Psychological Association division, it's a social justice division, that there are people in my division who I consider to be pretty extreme ideologues, you know, where on some level you can't even criticize women. You know, like there's no room for that. Like there's a lot of room to criticize men, but there's no room to criticize women. You know, and I'm not here to like just open up a conversation just to criticize women, but the reality is that we as human beings, human animals or humanimals, as I like to call us, we're flawed. You know, we have issues, we have difficulties, we have cognitive biases. You mentioned biases before. There's a lot of things that make it difficult to be human. And if we don't look at that and have compassion, not like I'm looking to find fault in you so I can excoriate you, but the reality is we all have issues, and how can we be more open? How do we create a more just world if we don't actually have the curiosity to know what it's like to be you?
You know, something happened to me last night, Daniel. I was interviewing a man, Jeff Pereira. He's a he contributes to Huffington Post and a couple different outlets on masculinity, manhood, and we're just having our kind of introductory conversation to bring him onto the show. And I was explaining my role as the host of the show is to not just pander to the people that agree with the general beliefs of the Mankind Project, and not to preach to the choir, but to ask the question for someone who's completely on the other side of the aisle. And I never expected my reaction, my body to react this way. When I said to him that I want to ask a question on behalf of the man or woman who stormed the Capitol, I want to reach that person that has their arms crossed to potentially any ideas of what we're talking. And I started to cry. And I feel it right now. I have had so much judgment on people like that, that I've forgotten to see the human in them, to understand that there is a human being, regardless of how different their views on the world may be to mine, to remember that there is a fucking human being in there. And who am I to throw stones at them if I'm not willing to first lead with compassion? I love that that's your first step. Lead with compassion. Step two, what's the clarity of intent? What's my purpose in this? When I reach out to that guy in my social circle here that has very differing beliefs to me on certain things, what's my intention? Is it to make him wrong, or is it to connect with him, or to invite him into a dialogue and a conversation where I and him have a chance to be wrong? And a chance to learn. And then number three, let curiosity lead it.
Nice.
It's such a simple formula now that I see it that way. And I just feel it in my heart, such a desire to just, I can have all the conversations I want with the yes men and women in my life that agree with everything I agree with. What is that going to achieve if I'm not willing to spend as much time having these same conversations with the people that I don't agree with?
You know, I'm completely with you, Brandon. I'm touched by your tears. And I'm curious if I may ask you a question.
Yeah, for sure.
So If those tears could speak, what would they say?
At the risk of sounding like one of the Beatles and butchering the accent, how can we get back to humanness? How can we get back to humanity? Why does it have to be left and right? Why can't it just be human? We've gotten this far in the tiny little speck of history that we've had as a dominating species on the planet. We've achieved so much together, yet we choose to only look at the things that divide and separate us.
Yeah.
So that's the current
beautiful
version of what's alive in me right now is not a desire to condemn, but a desire to connect with that person.
And I respect that and I honor that. In you. And to me, that would be the starting point of a courageous conversation. Like knowing that your purpose is to help connect and that you yourself want to connect. And if you go to people with that, I would say purity of intent, they'll feel that and they will feel invited to actually reveal themselves to you. If the intent is to find fault, that will inspire a different type of response. But to come in with a sense of real openness is unbelievably challenging. You know, because we all have our particular biases and orientations and our sense of rightness. And I have to really work with that in myself for sure, because I'm really judged. There's a part of me.
Yeah.
That's very judgmental. And I was about to say, I am judgmental, but that's not actually true. You know, that there is a part of me that's judgmental. There's a part of me that wants to hurt those I disagree with. You know, and then there's a part of me that wants to heal. I'd say that's the larger part of me, you know, over the years. But to be aware of those different parts, and I even thought about in terms of when you were talking about biases, about going into another neighborhood, I would say just staying with in your own neighborhood or wherever, and recognizing and accepting that there's a part of you that's prejudiced. How could it not be? How could you not have been influenced by the culture? You think about having a permeable brain, tabula rasa, with all of these messages. I'd call it psychoosmosis, you know, taking in these messages through the permeable membranes of the brain, inclusive of those about how we were supposed to be as a strong male, what real men do. There's no way to cordon one's brain off from these messages.
Yeah.
The best we can do is to be aware of them and have compassion, even toward parts of ourselves that we wish weren't there. Because if we don't practice self-compassion, or as I like to call it, selves compassion, because we can be very compassionate towards certain parts of ourselves, but not so much toward others.
Yeah.
You know, to be compassionate toward ourselves opens up the field of being compassionate toward others. And I think that a lot of guys have huge difficulty, you know, in this territory. That turns out to be a territory I've worked in quite a lot.
Yeah.
So, and to have compassion for others, it's a difficult thing because, you know, like, you know, that's what they're listening to. They're listening to Fox News. They're listening to, you know, information that if you and I grew up in those environments and we were getting those messages time and time and time again, you better believe we'd be thinking those damn Dems, those damn liberals, you know. And it's part of the fragility of the human brain.
Yeah,
I mean that we are influenced extraordinarily by our causes and conditions and community. And if we don't get that, if we think, no, I'm a strong individual, like this whole joke about man as individual, you know, uninfluenced by others. I determine all of this on my own. Yeah, good luck on that.
That rugged individualism.
Hello. No, you're not. Yes, I am. I'll defend it to the death. Great.
Yeah, and unfortunately, if you do, it might spell your death. As we know through research that men who don't learn to connect with their feelings and emotions statistically end up with some form of chronic illness or not taking care of themselves. And so let's zoom out and kind of wrap things up here and kind of have a zoom out of the conversation we've just had. So my interpretation of what we're talking about right now is that to be able to have a courageous conversation, it first needs to be kind of spelt out that really it's having a vulnerable conversation. It starts with understanding that courage and vulnerability, there's not many degrees of separation between the two. Some would argue there's no degrees of separation between the two. There's an inherent feeling of danger or risk to emotional hurt. But with that, if we can start firstly through the lens of compassion, right? How can I connect to this person? Not with the intention of being right or wrong, but how can I connect and open a dialogue with this person or this area of conflict? Number two, what is the clarity of intent? Like, am I clear on the intent of having this conversation? And that's a good chance to investigate myself. Investigate, do I really just want to shove it in their face right now and take this opportunity to be right and show them where they're wrong? Or deep down, what is it that I want with this person? Deep down, do I just want connection? Or is this just a selfish opportunity for me to speak my truth and just shotgun blast whatever's in my way when I'm trying to speak this and let it out? And then number three is keep an open mind to curiosity and a chance to learn, a chance to identify where I could be wrong.
I love that smile when you say that, where you could be wrong. No, not that.
So to me, as a big fan of Joseph Campbell, and the greater use of his hero's journey, be it Star Wars, or I believe that this encourages the individual to assume the role of the hero in their lives, and that through this courageous conversation, it's an arena for growth. It's a chance to step into the arena and not for the sake of trying to find comfort, for the sake of actually trying to find discomfort and build resilience. To build that courageous muscle is to build the resilience muscle at the exact same time. And rather than shy away from the conversation, rather than avoid difficult, uncomfortable conversations with the populations that we want to protect now, that doesn't foster resilience in them. It fosters this energy that we have to protect people rather than actually invite them into an uncomfortable conversation so they can build their resilience, so we can all stand up on our own two feet and move through life, being able to withstand the blows, being able to stand in the arena in our lives and not just be at the wills to the external, what's happening out there. Anyway, that is just my...
Is that all?
My rant. No, I have so much more I want to say. That I am not done. No, I'm complete with that.
I mean, I appreciate hearing from you, and I'm obviously messing around. I feel your passion, and your clarity of intent and your sense of mission on this planet. I feel very supportive of you. So you and I are just meeting. In this interview for the first time, and I'm really enjoying our conversation. I think it's an important one. And I think that when you mention the word resilience, which is something I've done a good amount of work in that territory, I really think that we are at an evolutionary stage on this planet. And I'll speak about not necessarily the male side, because there's obviously a spectrum there, but that guys have been successful by following a certain program, which you were actually speaking to in the very beginning of it, about kind of being the hunter-gatherers in a way. And that worked throughout human history. It may not have led to thriving, but at a minimum, we've survived through that. But the world is different now. Mm. The world is far more relational. It's far more connected. It's far flatter. You see in organizations, the flattening of organizations, hierarchy is dead. And we're at this very interesting point where if we don't really get our interconnectedness, like COVID, for example, let's put up a wall to stop COVID, insularize ourselves. No, that doesn't exist. That is a complete fantasy. So how do we expand to include is really part of my own sense of mission. And you're speaking to it, Brandon, which has to do with if we don't open ourselves to the views of others, and I can tell you, I get pushback. Oh, so you're supposed to be listening to white nationalists? You're supposed to go in and send the victims of white nationalism to try and help heal them? That's just, and I've literally heard that, yeah, you know, from people in terms of what I'm talking about. It's like, no, it doesn't mean agreeing, but if you don't go into and understand more about that mentality, then what are we doing? Yeah. It doesn't mean agreeing. Yeah. To me, I think it takes courage to face people and hear them who you vehemently disagree with. Mm-hmm. And I find my greatest point of frustration professionally is with a lot of smart people who I get massive pushback from, like, we shouldn't be talking to those people. And I go, really? What do you think happens when you ignore and you blame and you shame and you threaten individuals or groups who you disagree with? Do you think they just smile and say thank you and go away? No, they actually become more extreme.
Yeah, you're contributing to the problem.
I don't know how to get that message across.
Yeah.
That listening to does not mean agreement. And to me, it's like the most fundamental aspects of true argument, not the way we talk about being argumentative, but in the Greek sense, it's not who's right, it's what's right. And we're going to stay in the conversation to learn, as you used the word learn before. And I'm a strong believer in that. I can say for me personally, I've had many, many conversations with people who I at a minimum initially disagreed with. And I am a different person now. This is where my emotions come out. I'm a different person now because I have let in the wisdom of other people and even things that I disagree with at times and go like, you know, I've sat with and go, you know, I think there's some truth to that. I think there's something, you know, that's going on here. And I think even about the whole territory of male privilege, you know, all this, there's so much stuff about male privilege, male privilege, male privilege, male privilege. And I think there is male privilege. There's no question about that. And there are ways that male privilege has backfired. You know, guys die over like 5-6 years younger, commit suicide at 4 times the rate, you know, or just don't seek help. There are so many things about being male and the learnings of male that even if there's privilege, you know, to them, there's also aspects of it that are not privileged. And if we don't look at the wound within the privilege, we are missing something and we stay in this dyadic conflict. There's the oppressor and the oppressed. And that's also true. There are oppressors and oppressed.
Yeah.
But I find it so difficult to have an expansive conversation with a lot of people around, like, you know, both can be true. You know, like men can be privileged and many are privileged for sure. And there are problems in that as well. And if we don't look at that side of it, all we're looking at is the oppressed and the oppressor, and we lose a way of potentially transforming.
Well, mate, at the risk of going for another hour, because I'm sure we could easily do that.
Let's do it.
And you know what? Let that be the seed that we plant to say until next time. Because I would love an opportunity to have this conversation again, whatever iteration we can have this conversation. But I, for one, am very grateful for this opportunity. I've had a chance to touch my humanity. I've had a chance to touch my shadows. I've had a chance to touch the parts of myself I don't like, and also the parts of myself that I'm proud of throughout this conversation. And I hope that those listening, whether albeit live or through the podcast, have had a chance to do the same. Mate, tell us what you got going on right now, how we can support your current mission. and what you're up to and how we can follow up.
I appreciate that. Well, we actually have two of your people joking around about some Mankind project who are presenting at a conference I've put together for my APA division, which I don't know when this is going to be airing, or maybe some people are hearing it now, but March 12th to 14th, there is a conference that I put together, which is called Creating Connection and Community Through Courageous Conversations. Mm-hmm. Ray Arata and Ed Gurewitz, who are Mankind people, who are going to be doing one of the four presentations on that Saturday the 13th on leadership, what men need to do in terms of becoming more effective leaders. That's an area I'd love to talk with you about. If we do another podcast, it's something I'm super interested in. I'm going to be moderating a panel on boys. You know, what do we need to do? What are the courageous conversations we need to have with and about boys? How do we help boys become healthy men? That's a huge interest of mine. And then we have another presentation on violence. What is it in the female role and the male role that leads to violence? And then another one on dealing with health equities for boys and men of color, you know, who was actually done by our past president. Wow. And Lee Moon Wah, who did The Color of Fear, I think some of your audience will listen to, he is our keynote.
Wow. His TED Talk is amazing.
Oh, yeah. He's great. He and I are actually in the Leaderless Men's Group many years ago. And I reconnected with him recently, and he asked me to actually interview him for the keynote, you know, on the 12th. So if you go to div51.net, that you'll see that's or Division 51 APA, you know, to Google that, you can read about the conference. I'm psyched about it, you know, and if people want to look at my personal websites right now, you can look at relationshipsthatwork.com, relationshipsthatwork.com, as well as rewireleadership.com. Hey, Brandon.
Yo.
I've been interviewed by a lot of people. You're the upper echelon. Did a great job. I really appreciate your humanity, your courage, really. Your willingness to get out there on some skinny branches. And it really made it a meaningful conversation to me. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Daniel. I appreciate that, mate. This is, I only do this because it's uncomfortable and remarkably rewarding. So thank you, mate. I appreciate you saying that. And I will follow up with, that's what I do. So I can own that. Great. Well, Daniel, thank you so much, mate, for being here with us today. And I also want to thank those who have joined us live on the Facebook page. I see a couple of you. We've got Dehan Shetty. We've got Peter Otado. We've got a couple names here that have been contributing throughout the entire interview. Nina Fraser, thank you so much for joining us today. And this is just another chance and opportunity for us as people to look at another way that we can raise boys and men in society, that these outdated molds of masculinity and manhood they're on their way out. And if there's anything that I can take away from this discussion, we don't need to force it out. We just need to invite those that are a part of that outdated mold to look at things a bit differently and be prepared for ourselves to see where we might be wrong as well. So
good. But the next one will be the courage to change.
The courage to change. Well, Daniel, I'm going to get you to hang around for a hot second. But for those of you that have been joining us live, this has been another episode of the Mankind Podcast. Thank you so much again for your time, for your attention, for your giveaway, and for checking in with us. And we will see you very soon. There you have it. Another fantastic conversation here on the Mankind Podcast. Daniel Ellenberg, mate. Whew, what a wealth of wisdom that guy is. Just to give you guys an insight into kind of the role I get to play here as the host is, I get the luxury of being able to have firsthand conversations with these experts, with these researchers, with these people that have been in the fields for decades. And from that space, from that position, I always try and make sure that if I can be a model in the moment, if I can be a case study, an example to give you guys something tangible to take away from the interview, I'm going to do it. And with that, there's a lot of vulnerability involved. But more than anything, there's a lot of reward for that vulnerability. And this interview, particularly, I've been able to take away so much, especially around my understandings of the judgments I put on people that are different from me, the judgments that I put on people that believe different things than I do, that are potentially on the other side of the spectrum in terms of religion or politics or whatever. And today's interview really was just a nice reminder to see the humanity in everyone, to see the human on the other side of the whole. And I tell you what, it's planted some seeds in me. It's planted some seeds that are going to inform my decisions and my thought process going forward. And I can only hope that it's done the same for you as well. For those that want to follow up and find out more about Daniel Ellenberg, check out relationshipsthatwork.com, spelled exactly the way it sounds, as well as rewireleadership.com. Now, if you want to check out the conference, which is the Creating Connection and Community Through Courageous Conversations, you can find that in the show notes. We have that linked, and that's going to be this coming week, March 12th and 13th, via Zoom. It's got a small fee to be a part of it. And for all the psychologists out there and psychiatrists, there's 4 CE credits up for grabs for you there. So if you want to find out more, check out the show notes of this episode. This has been the Mankind Podcast, produced in association with the Mankind Project USA. I have been your host, Brandon Clift, and I personally want to thank our guest for joining us today and imparting their wisdom from their experiences in this amazing journey called life. And of course, I want to thank you, the listener, because through your attention and your support, you make it a heck of a lot easier for us to let men out there in the world know that they are not alone and that there is more than one way to be a man. Special thanks, of course, goes to my incredible team, Marketing and Communications Director Boyson Hodson, producer and editor of this episode, Michael Russo, who makes me sound so much more intelligent than I actually am. So, of course, special kudos goes there. And if you've been enjoying the music throughout this episode and all of our episodes, check out Jim Donovan and the Sun King Warriors. I have links to them in the show notes. Now, the fee for this episode is simple. If you found gold and insights that you believe could benefit your loved ones and those you care about, be sure to share it with them. And of course, remember that life doesn't happen to us, it happens for us, so long as we rip the pen out of fate's hand and become the author of our own story. So my friend, pick up the pen, and we'll see you next week.